It's time for Deputy Leader Fletcher Tabateau from the New Zealand First Party.
So we haven't been able to speak with New Zealand First for quite a while now, so this is quite a big catch-up. Deputy Leader Fletcher Tabateau has been busy down in the South Island and in Niue, but we will hear more about that in the coming weeks. Today, Lillian talks to Fletcher about Christchurch and capital gains, and she starts by asking what Fletcher's reaction was to the terror attacks and what New Zealand First are doing in response.
Well, thanks for asking, actually, because that was heartbreaking. I know everyone saw the Prime Minister down there, and her handling of this has just been one of empathy and kind of an outpouring of love. What I'm not sure is people may not realise is Winston was down there at exactly the same time, kind of just quietly supporting the Prime Minister in her role, and he was just there to support, to show, along with James Shaw and Simon Bridges, that this Parliament stands behind all those, you know, Kiwis, essentially ARS, who were affected. I know it sounds trite, but in the House we took an urgent debate on it to speak about the nation's response and what it is that we need to do. And on the first day, the Winston and Jacinda spoke, and then on the second day, the kind of next in line kind of spoke, and I was able to speak about our heartbreak, and, you know, talk about my case in Rotorua, where I have a Muslim lady on my little Rotorua electorate committee for New Zealand First, and just the pain that she and her husband felt in the community of Rotorua, and not just the pain, but the reaction was kind of so inclusive and, you know, so supportive, not just about tolerance, but about saying, let's deal with this together. So, yeah, it's been a kind of a silver lining to this terrible dark cloud that hit us that day.
And there has been, you know, there's been a very practical and, as you say, empathetic response. People have jumped to act and jumped to kind of say that this is not okay. But a lot of what has also been discussed, or was discussed sort of not long after, was the sort of rhetoric by politicians, and not only New Zealand First. Like I'm talking to you because there is known, you know, anti-immigrant stance sort of from New Zealand First, but this is sort of language that is used throughout all of the political parties, or you know, by people at some point, you know, in careers and that sort of thing. And I sort of wanted to get your stance in terms of whether there is sort of regret there, even. Obviously, most of the things that were pointed out were Winston Peters' comments from the End of Tolerance speech, you know, those sorts of things. All of these things that have come up just over the years and have contributed to, I'm not saying that this is the sole sort of reason of things, but it does contribute to a sort of anti-immigrant stance, or at least paints groups of people as the other, and the media too jumps on that, right? There's sort of there's responsibility in all sorts of groups and that sort of thing. But I'm wondering what New Zealand First feels in terms of their role in that.
No, thank you for asking, because people, you know, it upsets me when you say New Zealand First is anti-immigrant. So what people need to realise, and what we've always said, and I'll come back to the words that Winston used, is that we need to manage immigration. And then that gets conflated with bull and race. But we've always, our policy, our written policy, and our dialogue has always been about immigration. And we still think we need to talk about immigration and immigration numbers. That will always be a core policy of ours. I certainly, you know, I'm proud that I have, you know, Māori, Chinese, as I said, a Muslim woman on my committee in Rotorua, and I hope that speaks to the fact that it's not about race for me or the party that I represent. In fact, we had one of the few Indian MPs in Parliament last term. What Winston said that was quoted in the media, he spoke about, and he actually quoted Muslim leaders from other parts of the world where at the time the extremist Muslim regime was hiding amongst good Muslim people and using that as a base and kind of infiltrating, as it were, around the world. And he's, and I would be unapologetic about saying it, you know, kind of, it's about extremism. Don't let these extremists mark you or define you. Just as we would say that he's been talking about the white extremists in Austria with equal disdain, you know. It is about extremism.
But the, and yes, it is about extremism, but that kind of burden of responsibility, and you talk about that in terms of representation, right? You, and if we're in this country and it's a majority Pākehā country, right, and you have a smaller group of Muslim people, the majority of New Zealand doesn't necessarily have direct relationships to Muslim people, to different communities, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. We do have divisions and gaps in those things. And there's this kind of, you know, lots of people talk about the fear of the unknown. You don't know these things. So what you do know is what you see on TV, right? And what you see on TV is Islam as a religion being conflated with Islamist extremists, right? There is that kind of relationship. And not to the same extent do white supremacists get conflated with a you know, Christianity, for example. There isn't that same relationship. So do you think that we do actually need to be thinking about the way that we use these words and the way that we say these things?
I think we can never be afraid to talk and highlight extremism, and, you know, that's always going to be important. But I think equally, you know, like we're doing right now, we should be talking about our minority groups within New Zealand, and talking about, you know, you look at the people in Christchurch, you look at the people in the Rotorua community, and it doesn't matter what, you know, the Dutch, the, who else have we got, the Indians, the Pakistanis, the Tukalauans, the Muslims, the Turkish, who are predominantly Muslim. They're here to make new lives for themselves, and we should help and embrace them in that. And that is actually New Zealand First policy, because once you're a Kiwi, you're a Kiwi, and whether you've been here a day or were born here, we're looking out for you. And I think what we need to do is be having more of these conversations so that people understand that New Zealand First is a party that would act equally as strongly, and probably more so. In fact, last term we were the only political party advocating for the Indian community, who seemed to be being abused, unfortunately, by their own in the fruit picking industry and things like that. So yeah, let's talk about it more. I think that's one of the greatest antiseptics we have, to talk about the good things as well as the extremism, which we could never flinch from, and especially, you know, political organisations and government, we must be talking about these things and can't shy away from them. But let's take the opportunity to talk about how wonderful it is that we do have this amazing diversity in New Zealand, and good people who are either, well, most of them, all of them, are wanting to make new lives in New Zealand and be a positive part of it.
So with, I think it was Clayton Mitchell that put forward the what became called the New Zealand Values Bill. In terms of something like that, which yep. many people raise as being, you know, what it does is paint a certain picture of what a Kiwi is, if that's what you want to say. You know, what are we putting up as a kind of bar that people have to reach to become a Kiwi? Yes, you say that we'll protect Kiwis, you know, in quotation marks, as once they're Kiwis. But what do the people have to do? What do people have to give up in order to be that?
Well, actually, it was never a bill. It was just a conversation
right.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and that never made it anywhere, but I'd quite happily have the conversation, because what values do we hold dear? We hold the value of religious tolerance. We hold the values of equality in making sure that we treat women with respect in an equal and tolerant society. But we
also have like really high numbers of domestic abuse. You know, there's sort of this kind of two-faced thing where our society, though, is...
Just because we're not perfect, does it not mean that we should hold not only ourselves but those who would be Kiwis to a standard? I mean...
Are we holding ourselves to that same standard?
Absolutely we are. We put people in prison for it. And we don't tolerate it. We're trying to not only run education campaigns, but we'll punish people who don't adhere to the values, in quotation marks, of New Zealand society. We don't think it's okay for homophobia. We don't think it's okay for a man to beat up a woman because she's not doing what she's told. And so... you know, is it fair to have a conversation about values for immigration? Well, a lot of countries around the world do. And I'm not sure, actually, the values conversation at the conference never went anywhere, so I'm not sure if New Zealand First will do anything with it, but I think it's a very fair debate to have. We would hold New Zealanders... And we do hold New Zealanders to the same, to that standard.
What is the New Zealand First position on the UN Migration Pact?
What do you mean? We signed it.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
And actually, just to point out, because the National Party and other kind of extreme right-wing political perversions around the world attacked it, this is a migration pact which seeks to address the flows of migrants across borders and has a particular focus on women and children and making sure they're not abused or taken advantage of during those flows. And it actually asks these big developed nations, what are we doing to make sure that these refugees aren't created in the first place? What can we do to make sure that they're able to live peacefully in their own homes? Of course New Zealand First is going to sign up to that.
Boy, okay. Well, I've kept you for ages, but I did want to touch on the capital gains tax.
Oh, yeah.
Which, of course, is the other sort of big thing that's been talked about more recently. And I suppose, you know, New Zealand First has been pretty clearly against this from the beginning, so it's not really a surprise on your part.
No,
and what was said was that there is no public mandate. But do you think, I mean, how can you sort of... How do you say that when actually there are plenty of people that do want this, and actually on a global scale, we're one of three countries in the OECD that doesn't have one. So at what point are we going to take that step and sort of be brave?
It's not about bravery. It's about looking at all those other countries in the world that do have a capital gains tax and asking the question, what is it that we were trying to achieve in introducing a capital gains tax, and do we see that in these other countries where it has been implemented? And so New Zealand First has, from the start, very much paid attention to capital gains tax in the rest of the world. And in the end, we've said, and we say it again, they have not achieved their objectives around inequality and trying to bridge the gap from the poorest to the wealthiest. They haven't achieved that. And so what is it? Is that why we wanted a capital gains tax? If that's why we wanted a capital gains tax and it's not going to do what we hoped it would, and if it's about inequality, then let us address inequality directly. And so for New Zealand First, for example, when you study New Zealand's economic history and look back at when inequality was at its lowest, a lot of that comes back to home ownership. And actually that's been part of New Zealand First's policy on immigration. Let's manage immigration so that we can build more homes and welcome more people, not into a garage in the back of Auckland, but into a home. And let's build more homes. and let's make homes affordable again.
How long ago was that though? Because things are in terms of home ownership being high and therefore inequality being low. Because things are changing. You know, we don't.
Decades.
Yeah. 40s, so 50s, so if we're thinking about how we're actually going to be in the world now, in a time where sea levels are rising, food crises, you know, issues like this, and when it comes down to it, it's not, we need to think of alternative ways of living, actually, and we can't all own our own house with a backyard, and we can't all have that sort of individual lifestyle anymore. It's just not sustainable. So how else are we going to ensure that inequality level goes down? If
that's a big call. I disagree with you on that, because if you look at home design now and our Billion Trees program and things like that, the sustainable nature of housing and its impact on the environment can be zero. But then that's a whole other debate. So the other reason, well, that's the main reason we could not get past and agree with CGT. But right now, New Zealand has GDP per capita isn't growing very fast. This is the whole inequality debate around how do we make sure we distribute wealth between high earners and low income earners. And we don't just give out money. That's not going to be the solution. Although New Zealand First was the party that negotiated for the increase in the minimum wage, it was New Zealand First that insisted on that. And that's going to be a big part of bringing down the inequality gap. But the other thing we have to remember is right now, New Zealand's productivity, in terms of what do we get per person working in terms of income, is some of the lowest in the world. So if you put a capital gains tax on business in this environment, it's going to start going the other way. Mm. And by the way, it wouldn't make house prices cheaper, which everyone thinks it would. And the government and the advisory group, when they talked about CGT, said it had to be revenue neutral, which means the government wouldn't make any more money on this tax. It would have to give it back in other ways. So, yeah, it wasn't a revenue earner. New Zealand First and examples from around the world show that it wouldn't help solve the inequality issue, and it certainly wouldn't help with the lack of housing in New Zealand right now.
The specific, concrete other ways then that you're going to address inequality, like you've said, the raising of the minimum wage and living wage, that sort of thing. What else would you be doing?
So home ownership is a big one, and I know KiwiBuild's getting some slack at the moment because it's not building as many homes as we hoped right now, but that will. But actually, the reality is there's been about 8,000 homes built when we have some of the highest construction levels going on right now. So the reason why home ownership is so important is because the value of the home and the kind of value you get out of having a home over your lifetime kind of increases not only your living standard, but also kind of your wealth accumulation over time. And building homes is fundamentally part of that. But the other things that this government has done, which includes New Zealand First, is the winter energy payment, the welfare payments, free first year in tertiary education. All of these things make access to, you know, a person's own potential easier. And, you know, with the winter energy payment, for example, that just helps over winter for people who couldn't otherwise afford it.
Okay, and I want to keep talking about it because obviously there is a type of home that we live in, which is why those homes are cold in the first place, right? So if we did start kind of changing the way that we do look at living, I suppose, or the types of houses that we live in, perhaps then you could kind of even just cut out that winter energy payment because you'd be living in warm homes.
Yeah, that's a long-term ideal dream, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. If a house is insulated well and, you know, double glazing and things like that, then hopefully the cost of electricity, or the electricity bill at the end of the winter month kind of thing, is just that little bit lower. And because there is an identified problem with people who are, I think we're calling it electricity poor, you know, they just literally can't afford the electricity bill.
Again, on the home ownership thing, and because you said that you sort of you disagree with the idea that nobody can own their own home with a backyard and that sort of thing. But again, if we are going to keep building, you know, big houses with big backyards, that sort of thing, we're going to be spreading out, right? And that's going to decrease the amount of fertile land that we have to grow food
in. One of my biggest frustrations in the world, just south of Auckland, you know, the Papakura area and things like that, some of our best soils with houses being put on it, that's just bad town planning, that is. But anyway, I completely agree with
you. Okay, so another day. Let's do that another day then.
Yeah.
I guess I do want to just finish the kind of outward-facing public, what you would say, you know, the Prime Minister saying that there was no public mandate to put the CGT through. It's fairly well known that New Zealand First was against it, and obviously Labour and Greens being for it. Mm-hmm. Therefore, New Zealand First was the one that kind of stopped that going through. Given New Zealand First is polling sort of low, beyond, you know, below the 5% threshold for one, but also got into Parliament on a lower threshold, but in terms of Labour, right, being the kind of middle party there, do you think that it's unfair that New Zealand First would veto the bigger group?
I suppose it could look like a veto, but we, as the Prime Minister said, we're in negotiations right from the start and had this conversation. The problem with things like this is this was one of the most extreme capital gains tax proposals from this independent advisory group that any country in the world would ever have seen. And we just couldn't get there. And yes, we could be accused of a small party blocking it, but let's not forget we are a coalition partner, and Labour would not be, you know, in government right now if we hadn't done that. We negotiated fairly. They've always known our position on it. And, you know, that's where we landed at the end of the day. And I hope your listeners realise that everything else that's happened that's good, that we kind of tend to thank Labour for, New Zealand First was there supporting it. And it couldn't have happened without New Zealand First. So this is a true MMP parliament, and these are the places we get to from time to time.
That was Deputy Leader Fletcher Tabateau from the New Zealand First Party.